Richard Emmanuel is here to talk about Pope Francis' new position on LGBT issues and more. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Charlotte.
What's your position on Pope Francis' new position on gay marriage?
I am really startled, and I'm very pleased. As you know, I studied at Catholic University of America, and there, not only did I lose my trust in Roman Catholicism, I gave up Christianity. This pope is akin to the most liberal pope in the church, John the 23rd. I was at Catholic University during the last year of his reign, and his position was to embrace, this is John the 23rd, to embrace humanity, not to rule it. And this appears to be the position that Pope Francis has taken. As you know, Francis is the first Jesuit of that order to become pope, and that's a very intellectual side of the church. It's often talked about as being the CIA of the Catholic Church, because they have such a network of intelligence and seeking what is going on culturally. So that's why when he came out and said the church is obsessed with gays, abortion, and birth control, I looked immediately at the word obsessed. Remember back in the 90s, Calvin Klein came up with a wonderful marketing scheme, a perfume called Obsession. Now, obsession is very interesting as a word, and remember the Jesuits are very clear about language. And so if we look at the word obsession, the original, it comes from the act of an evil spirit in possessing or ruling a person. So when you think about Francis' statement, the church, meaning the collective church, the body of the church is the people, has become possessed, so to speak, on these subjects. He's talking about it as a means by which others distinguish themselves apart from the rest, that their mission or their meaning in life becomes one of these obsessed relationships, whether it's about gays, whether it's about abortion or birth control, that the persons live their lives, that this is the meaning of their lives, to force others to conform and to color within the lines. Apparently, Francis is saying, wait a minute, let's look at the total picture. Let's look at what is what would be encompassing all of humanity. So I would put him in the category of a humanist. And unlike his predecessors, Pope Benedict XVI and John Paul II, who were crusaders, who were, you know, basically moving more and more to a smaller confine of the church, staying within the lines, coloring within the lines, this pope is taking it elsewhere. I loved it on the interview when he was asked about gays. He so humanly said, "Who am I to judge?"
Do you think we can trust his words?
I personally feel very good about this person. He comes across authentic. He has an amazing openness. And in this coming week, he's going to meet with a group of Muslim imams at St. Peter's and try to reconcile this difference between the Muslim world and Christianity, and that's a big step. So if he's moving in these directions, he's doing what John the 23rd did, open up the discussion and stop the fear of the other and see the other as part of ourselves, as a reflection of ourselves, rather than rejecting it.
Where do you think the strategy of the Catholic Church is headed?
Well, the Catholic Church, as an embodiment of Western civilization, is confronted, as we all are, with rapid transformation. The amount of knowledge entering our understanding now is doubling every one or two years. This is amazing. The Church is having to look at its position. Remember, the Pope is portrayed as the shepherd of the church. So he's basically opening this process of questioning again, which hasn't happened in 50 years. We're talking about a half a century. John the 23rd died in December of 1963, and here we are, 2013. I mean, this is an amazing throwback to a time of reconciliation and a time of openness. I want and I do trust this shepherding of this Pope.
What is your personal commitment to LGBT civil rights?
The issue is a civil rights issue. It's not about whether you're gay, lesbian, transsexual, or black, white, or Hindu, whatever religion. It's always about humanity's respect for one another. We are all one, and that is why we can get ourselves into trouble when we become obsessive about our position, that we don't see it as a human condition. I mean, this idea of the straight versus gays, and that straights are normal because they're in the majority. Well, the numbers don't mean anything. It's one way of oppressiveness, of one, the majority group, oppressing a minority group. And this has nothing to do with anything but the person's rights. And humanity has evolved to this stage in which our rights as people are being challenged on a number of levels. Where are we taking this IT industry? Where's this information technology taking us? And how is this social networking, is it going to liberate us, or is it going to force us into new constraints, a new tyranny of technology? I'm amazed at just the number of people walking around, not even in real space, texting their smartphones. They're not in the real world. I mean, I find this very disturbing.
What's your spin on Russia's anti-gay laws, especially with the Sochi Winter Olympics coming up in 2014?
The Russian LGBT community is threatening to their power structure because it doesn't conform to what we call staying within the cartoon lines and just using certain numbers of colors. This is a big challenge. And I think the world has basically needs to embrace the Olympics, not boycott it, but embrace it and make the changes there. And that's where the process will be revelatory, by people coming forward and saying, look, we are all one. We are one humanity. And this was the purpose of the Olympic Games. It was to bring different parts of ancient world and the ancient city-states of Greece especially, into a camaraderie, a new embrace. And in many cases, this is what prevented wars. So if we look at the idea of Russia today, it's going through a very, very interesting period because it's coming back into the power game. And now with Putin, quite a figure himself in terms of where he's coming from. It's a kind of a new totalitarianism, and it must be challenged. And as the best process is to challenge it in the sense of a dialogue, to open up a dialogue, not to threaten, but to stand one's ground and say, look, these are human rights. This is what Russia should be standing for, and why the process should be open to discussion and do the dialogue way before the games happen.
How can people get information about you and the church?
Our position is self-exploration and transcendence through the actual living of life. So we do have a website, it's called thechurch.org. We're not proselytizing any one kind of religion. We're interested in the individual story, having the individual come out and live their life. So if people want to find out more about us, there's a phone number there, or they can email, and we always make contact, and we try to help the person in their own questions, in their own journey. So my position is it's not about Jesus, it's not about the Buddha, it's not about Muhammad, it's not about Confucius. It's about you. It's your story. So if people are interested in exploring their stories and need help, we're here.
What projects are you working on?
I'm working with a professor in mythologies at Boston University. So we're working on a project that is juxtaposed between science and religion. Religion and science were at one point the same thing. Both were, in their proper perspective, searching for the truth. What happens is when you get a certain amount of knowledge, you believe that you have it and no one else has it, so then it becomes a tyranny of one group over the other. And that's how hierarchies are established. It's established by one group withholding information from the other. And that process is one that creates a hierarchy of control. So knowledge should belong to all of humanity. We are collective. This is why there's so many problems in terms of what do we do with such an expanding horizon of knowledge. Is science now becoming a new tyranny through corporate manipulation? Is everything about science now about the money in terms of what projects to finance? There's very little investigation in terms of consciousness and the understanding of what consciousness is, and then what is the respectfulness of the individual versus the societal need to know. How much does society need to know of the individual? These are big questions that are going on. Most scientists now take the position that this 21st century will decide the fate of humanity. Interestingly, there was a conference last summer, it was the second conference of the group, I think it's called GF 2045. That is a date. 2045 is the time in which the scientific IT community believes that the science will be available to download human consciousness into cyborgs. Is that where we want to go? Where's the discussion on this? So this is the kind of project that we think needs to be done. And these discussions as to spirituality, scientific knowledge, where are we taking ourselves? Are we going to design ourselves out? These are the questions that we have to look at. This is the new project that we're working at the church, and we always enjoy other people's input.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
Yep. There are things known, and there are things unknown. And in between are the doors of perception. Why that is so meaning to me is because it's about the polarities that known and unknown. And then what is in between is our own life. And our life is, in a sense, comes out of the unknown and then goes back into the unknown. I'm always asked, you know, Richard, how can you be so certain that you have a soul? And I always point out, let's get the language straight here. You do not have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body. And that body is what you are using to be in this dimensional world, this reality. So what is on this side is called life. What is to come after we leave is something else. So people say, do you believe in life after death? And I say, of course not, silly. Life is on this side. Whatever is on the other side is the unknown.